precept, do not speak dishonestly and communicate truthfully. And I looked at three different authors' points of view. Robert Aiken from The Mind of Clover, which most of us are familiar with. Diane Eshin Rizzetto, Waking Up to What You Do. I enjoyed her writing too. And then the third one, surprise, is the Yoga Sutras, which I studied when I was in yoga teacher training. It's the handbook of the science of yoga. And they cover truthfulness as well. So listen to what I have to say and decide which one sounds best to you, I guess. We'll start with Robert Aiken. He calls the great precept not lying. Dogen Zenji said, don't use rootless words. Be loyal to the essence of Buddha nature. When this is clear, then the various social and psychological virtues of truth-telling are illuminated. Self-deception, deception of others, cheating, gossip, and carelessness with language are all disloyal to the peace in our heart of hearts. Words expressive of that peace are true. Silence expressive of that peace is true. When you read about the precept here, in the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, putting forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly. So that brings to mind silence. In Western culture, we have a tradition for silence as a presentation of truth. For example, the story of Jesus standing in front of Pilate in silence. And in today's court of law, you can stand before the court and be mute. You can stand mute. And when the court asks, guilty or not guilty, when you stand mute, the court will generally order not guilty plea. I know, I didn't realize that either. I never heard that before. The Cheng Tao Ko says, it speaks in silence. In speech, you hear its silence. This part I'm not able to get my head around, but I'm sharing it with you. So I think you'll be able to get it. When we can't hear the silence in the words of others, we know something is wrong. But it is not easy to notice the error in ourselves. But the truth is there, even in mindless chatter. I don't know if anybody...
Can you read that again?
When we can't hear silence in the words of others, we know something is wrong. But it's not easy to notice that error in ourselves. But the truth is there, even in mindless chatter.
Is that mixing relative and absolute?
Possibly. The absolute truth. It's there, but we can't always hear it.
No matter what we do or say, there's an absolute truth that does exist.
Right. That's what I almost called you about. But I figured in the middle of the day, then what?
Well, does the paragraph before that, shed any light on what that means? Is there a previous paragraph before
that? In the realm of the inexplicable Dharma, putting forth not one word is the precept of not speaking dishonestly.
think part of it, or at least the way I would interpret it, is that even the mind is chatter, it's truth. Well, it's not necessarily what being said is truth, or what is being told by mindlessly chatter. Mm. And you're learning the truth about that person.
Right.
Or the gossip. You're learning. The gossip
character
may be false, but the truth is there.
The truth of that person's demeanor at the time, yeah. Thank you. The second part is the Dharma wheel turns from the beginning. There is neither surplus nor lack. The sweet dew covers the earth, and within it lies the truth. Meaning the truth is ready at any time for you to harvest. Aiken points out that truth must be delivered with compassion. Our lives are filled with ordinary purposes and also crises. How may we be expressive of truth when dealing with them? In some cultures, as in Japan, I don't know if this is still true necessarily, but doctors do not tell their patients when they have a terminal illness because it just doesn't seem right in their culture. But here in the U.S., in our culture, we're learning from social research that patients know anyway. At some level, they kind of know that they're terminal, or that they have a grave illness. And we should not encourage false games at a time when sick people and their families can realize the deepest dimensions of their relationships. It's a critical time. And consider the karma, the deception of those people who are close to death. This sets up for that dying person. Robert Aiken thinks it would be dreadful, and he postulates that perhaps that's how ghosts are born.
That's how ghosts are born.
Family members could be left with a sense of unfinished business that can never be finished. We generate ghosts in ordinary times, too, leaving communications unfinished, like not resolving an argument, conveying mistaken impressions, which is really lying, in my view. Saying that a five-year-old is underage is five instead of six to get into a park, when in fact the child is six, and the child knows she's six, and she's proud of being six, but mom and dad say, she's only five. You know, save a couple bucks. Consider what that's teaching your child. Or saying you're over 65 to get a discount. In fact, you're not.
Nobody would do that.
But, Aiken, and then failing to share, withholding the truth to make things go smoother. I know in my household, sometimes I do that. I just don't say. I'm not sure that's, I guess in a sense it's, not communicating truthfully. But things go smoother if I don't say it. I mean, eventually I let it out, but not at first. Aiken suggests that the net of Indra can inspire a universe as a great communication workshop. Do you all know what the net of Indra is? It's a net with many faceted jewels.
Jewels at every intersection.
At every intersection within a net, just imagine a huge net, and it's as big as the universe, and reflecting each other. So that's the net of Indra. A great compassionate communications workshop in which each practice the expression of compassion, compassionate truth with all beings, and encourage that practice in others toward ourselves. That could be lovely. He also talks about bright livelihood, bright lifestyle, and social activism, sort of all in one. And think about the work you do for your livelihood. Don't work for advertising, advertising, which seeks to manipulate people into thinking they need a product or a service that they don't need. Do not fall for advertising lies either. Not lying means no complicity with lies. And I think more of us fall into that. Are influenced by ads that are constantly put before us, whether we're driving in a car or listening to the radio or any of those things. You just can't get away from it. Even public radio, you hear the names of businesses and people who have contributed. But there are honest businesses in the world these days. Socially responsible organizations who claim they work for the greater good of society, who contribute a portion of their profits to those in need. We live in a capitalistic society and we have to make a living to feed oneself and support a family. So working for a living may require compromising your integrity a bit for a time. But as an employee, you could try to influence a company, if it's not too massively large, influence a company to become more ecologically or socially aware of its actions. If possible, urge it to work for positive change that cuts through dishonesty and disrespect for people and for the planet. Aiken states, right livelihood is not solely a literal injunction, but also a matter of responding wisely to circumstances. Wisdom rises from innate honesty. Ethics is common sense, the sense we have in common. In business, pay employees well, charge a fair price for your product or service, take good care of the customer. Basic ethical behavior. Now we'll move on to Diane Rizzetto. She points out that we all search for truth throughout our lives. We look to our parents when we're very little looking for the truth, because parents are be-all and end-all. They have all the answers when you're little. We look at teachers and even social conventional wisdom for the truth. What we're looking for is certainty. It makes us feel safe and comfortable. So if we know something is true and we can hang our hat on it and be certain of it, but then it may feel good for a while. But it can also lull us into compliance and deadens our inquiry and questioning. Without it, we might feel like a trapeze artist hanging between bars as you're going from one bar to the next. But grasping it, we swing back and forth, ignoring the ever-changing nature of people and events swinging in and out of our lives. If any of you have read any of this book, she talks about trapeze artist quite a bit. Remember, so that's where that came from. She was just bringing it in again, but I thought it worked, because you do feel like when you're not certain of the truth, then you do feel like you're sort of hanging there. Buddha said, "Do not believe what I tell you. You must find it out for yourself." What is truth? When asked, "Where is the great truth?" the Zen master answered, "It just moved." Truth won't be pinned down. How do we pin down the moment? Truth defies definition because it's changing so quickly. As soon as we've tried to grasp it, we lost it. Another Zen master is also said that it's unutterable, beyond expression. It can't be grasped, written down, or explained in a lecture or a book. In a sense, every time we open our mouth to speak, we stray into deception because we've attempted to speak something that can't be communicated. Yet we have to communicate. Remember Indra's net? How wonderful that would be. Sometimes we even have to speak untruths. Would it be wise to tell a five-year-old, "I can't say for certain that Mommy and Daddy will be here to take care of you while you grow up"? Certainly not. Say that to a child. But it may be the truth. When do you lie intentionally? Do you reveal the hiding place of innocent people hiding from ruthless killers? How do we know when to keep silent and when to speak truthfully? I had an interesting conversation Sunday when I told someone about that I was talking about this, and she immediately went into having to embellish the truth a little bit, or a lot, in raising children. And she has a special needs child who is not always able to take it in, you know, take in the hard truth. So, how do we know when to keep silent and when to speak truthfully? And she says that any of the precepts can only serve to the extent that they can help us face the truth of our actions from moment to moment. The moment of choice to distort or not to distort, that is when the practice begins. So it's what we do, and that's practice. Deciding each time. And finally, I'm going to talk about Patanjali, the yoga teacher. You've read him.
Mm-hmm.
Other people who have studied yoga might be familiar with him. Similar to Buddhism, where there's eight
Eightfold Path,
yes. There are eight limbs of yoga. I should say eight limbs of yoga. The final being, the first being yama, which means abstinence. And yama consists of nonviolence, truthfulness, non-stealing, sense control, and non-greed. And satya is truthfulness. That's a piece of it. And it means removing the masks we wear from our faces, language, hearts, and thoughts. Satya is a compassion to honor our shortcomings alongside our strengths and own up to them in our hearts. It is a conviction to be real. The Yoga Sutra says, to one established in truthfulness, actions and their results become subservient. And then I want to read a little bit out of here about that. By establishment of truthfulness, yogis get the power to attain for themselves and others the fruits of work without doing the work. In other words, things come to them automatically. All nature loves an honest person. Then you need not run after things, for they will run after you. And if you are always truthful, if no lie comes from your mouth, a time will come when all you say will come true. Even if you say something by mistake, it will happen. Because by the practice of satya, the words become so powerful and clean that honesty observes you. It wants to be with you always. If a curse is spoken, it will happen. If a blessing is said, it will happen. The more we lead a life of honesty, the more we will see the results. and that will encourage us to be more honest. With establishment in honesty, the state of fearlessness comes. Fearlessness. One need not be afraid of anybody and can always lead an open life. When there are no lives, the entire life becomes an open book. But this comes with only with an absolutely honest mind. When the mind becomes clear and serene, the true self reflects without disfigurement, and we realize the truth in its own nature. He also goes on to say, a vow of absolute honesty means we can no longer tell white lies either. If by being honest we will cause trouble, difficulty, or harm to anyone, we should keep quiet. Instead of lying and saying things like, I don't know, we can be frank. I know, but I don't want to tell. That part I'm not selling. Yeah. Anyway, so those are my three experts. What do you think?
Well, Arita, I have just a general question.
Mm-hmm.
Is lying, is that just verbal lying, or are we also talking about deceit in other ways, like covering up our, I'm such an honest person, covering up a mistake that we made? So no one will see it, or something like that. Is that lying also, or is it just a verbal?
Well, I think it's more than verbal. I'm no expert, but I think it's actions too, how you behave, what you do in the world. And sometimes I would think that a mistake doesn't always have to be disclosed unless it affects other people. If you just sort of screw up on something, you can, moment by moment, take it moment by moment, case by case, really, is what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that many of these things that we've already discussed here that on the surface may seem black and white, but best policy is always to tell the truth. You should lead your life in this fashion. So if you don't, no lies. Well, when you get into a specific situation, whether it's maybe with a child or in other circumstances, there are other factors that enter in that may and should cause one pause in terms of whether you tell, quote unquote, a truth or handle a situation in a different way. Because, as we've already indicated, there may be impacts, potential very negative impacts on others if I were to, in certain situations, just explicitly tell a truth about a situation. So, it gets complicated. It's not saying, you know, when you read it on the page, it's, oh yes, well, it's a wonderful thing. Be able to always tell the truth. Don't utter any falsehoods. However.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also says dishonesty, which is a little different than lying.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell a truth with the intention not of helping and not being truthful, but to hurt. Oh, I only told you for your own good. No. You told them to hurt them.
Yeah, that's not
honesty.
But there's more to that, because there are people who will tell the truth because they feel compelled to tell the truth regardless of how it has an effect on you. So I may not intend to harm you, but if you ask me, I just can't hold back about, you know, whatever the thing is. And I don't think that's right. I think we also have to learn to be quiet.
Well, yeah, the default state by that is silence.
Yeah.
That's what I noticed when I was reading about this precept. There was always a kept coming up about silence, mm-hmm. staying silent. And on the blog and the website, there's one of them is about the five things you should consider before speaking.
Oh, that's
when
right.
I read that, I thought, well, that's going to cut way down. Which would be a really good thing.
Can you remember them?
I can get my phone out. I took a picture of them.
Is it?
Well, one is, I guess I have memories.
Is it
true?
Is it true?
Is it helpful?
Is it kind?
Yeah.
Is it helpful?
Yeah.
Is it helpful?
Yeah. Here they are.
Yeah.
I would normally never pull my phone out. Is it factual?
Is that
true?
Is that a true?
Yeah.
Is that a true statement?
unless I'm checking to make sure I've turned the ringer on.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, I'll just sit over here. Factual and true, helpful or beneficial, spoken with kindness and goodwill, hoping for the best of all involved, endearing, that's spoken in a manner that the person would be able to take in, and then timely, and it says occasionally something true, helpful, and kind will not be endearing or easy for someone to hear, in which case you need to think about when to say it.
Timing.
May
yes.
be the proper time. So yeah, I'm going to try this. So we'll see how far it gets because you people don't know me very well. I try very hard not to talk. Typically, when I leave a group of people, I spend my whole drive home going, man, I cannot be quiet.
But you have to be careful with the other side of it, too. I like that you covered that silence is a kind of speech.
Maybe you understand it more than I.
If you habitually practice silence, if you're a quiet person, it's very easy to find yourself practicing the lie of omission. It's very easy to find yourself keeping your mouth shut when you could say something. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to practice this sort of, well, that's not my problem, kind of cutting off.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very uncomfortable to interrogate your own silence and say, who does this serve? Because it's me most of the time.
Yeah, it's a protection, sort of.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond, Mark, or I respond to what you said, which is, I think, not only with this precept, but a lot of precepts, like, the question, like, is this the right thing to do, or is that not the right thing to do? Like, maybe another question to ask is, like, is karma operating here, or am I responding the way that I am because I'm coming out of habit? And so in that case, like, is it just my habit to be quiet? Well, is that really, like, being true to the spirit of this precept? Or am I saying what I'm saying because I have this habit of needing to save face? Or am I saying what I'm saying because that's what socially is expected, to like not screw the pot in the situation? And so just checking in, like, am I doing what I'm doing out of habit, or am I like making that practice choice to do the thing that feels true in this particular situation? And of course, not always we have that option. Like, this can happen at a particular speed that you don't have the ability to check in first, but hopefully, like, through the process of practice, we're at come to a place where we can, when it's time to like throw the punch, so to speak, like you've already done that, or whatever it is. You played your scales, or whatever. So I guess that's.
It seems like with this precept and all the precepts, it's got to go through some kind of personal filter. You know, your own truths, what the situation, everything, and it's. It's like finding a way to make those filters work faster for you, but still have them work. it's just like a falling effect of everything that happens and everything that's thrown at you. Kind of have to figure it out as it happens, but you know, like you said, like, don't, like, if something happens, you're just like, it's already happened, you know.
Well, I think you grow with practice and honest living. You can grow in wisdom. You know, it's a, you know what to say and what to do a little more quickly as you become wise, compassionate.
I do find that the people write speech, practice with speech. It's like, I don't know, that might be the hardest realm of all. Sexuality, stealing, you know, like there's because of the nature of it. You're just like, and you're wrapped up with other people's karma and social expectations, and it just seems like people can, I don't know, for me anyway, like practice started making differences in many areas of my life, but conversation was one where it took a long time for that practice to manifest. Which stuff would still just come out.
I feel like we're living in a time right now where it's not even clear what the truth is a lot of the time, too. There's like, I think there's like this meta question of, well, what is the truth? You know, and people will fall on their sword for stuff that I swear to God is not true. So it's just really, I think if we just live in an interesting time too. You know, you were talking about advertising and not believing advertising. And I think maybe 20 years ago that was easier, but now we're finding out we don't even know if what we read on Facebook was something that somebody in Russia made up. Mm-hmm. So I think just even being able to discern what is true is just really difficult anymore.
It has been in the past, what they called about yellow journalism back 100 years ago. But one thing, you know, thinking about this and about silence kind of thing, because I said the default. I mean, there is the truth. And you say it's an event and certain things happen. You're going to tell someone about that. You're going to use words which are inexact. So now the teller is telling, using words to tell the truth. Now the hearer is hearing those words, and their own experience interprets those. So you may very accurately tell that person what you saw, and to you it's true, and they hear it, and to them, you know, if they're a trusted friend, they'll believe it's the truth. But say you use the exact same description, but it's in Spanish, and the person, your friend, doesn't understand Spanish. Is it the truth? So, words, once we start communicating with words, the truth can be obscured.
Well, you can change the words, too.
Right.
You don't have to say it the same way. You influence it by the way you say.
You're trying to be as accurate as possible, the words are still in an exact measure of the absolute truth. They're an inexact measure of an absolute truth.
Kind of related to that for me is something, and I don't know where I picked up on this, but it's been sort of on my mind maybe for the past 4 to 6 weeks as it relates to my own practice. But it has to do with Indra's net.
Oh.
I keep going back to Indra's net. I'm toying with the idea of making my own Indra's net, and if I do, I'll bring it.
Cool.
It would be really small. I have to constantly remember that just because I saw it, I don't know what's going on. All I saw was that. So I don't know how that person got there. I don't know what's on his mind. I don't know what his life is like, his problems are like. I don't know anything about the whole situation except, yes, I saw him there, which is a true statement. But is that enough? I don't think it's always enough. That's why I go back to Indra's net, because yes, I saw, but the possibilities are absolutely endless as to what is really going on there. Mm-hmm. And I have to remember that. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Maybe that's what's in that line we were working on earlier about if you can't hear the silence in someone's words, mm-hmm. right? If the only truth is reality itself as it's emerging, if you're speaking and you're not describing that reality, if you're speaking and you're describing that reality, there's a kind of silence to it, right? There's you're not really saying anything new. You're just saying it's here. But if you are saying something new and you're saying something that's not here, then maybe that's the silence that goes out of your words. Because you're undertaking a creative act rather than a descriptive one.
Last night, my wife and I were having a heated discussion about the decision we were negotiating. And I'm reasonably sure that if I had a lie detector test on, I would have passed if I was telling the truth the entire time we were talking. And that, she got pissed and she left. And I sat and went, well, yeah, I was as honest as I could be with that. I think it was all really accurate. And then about 15 minutes later, I'm like, shit. And I caught this place over here where I was feeling deprived, that I was defending, not consciously, but the words that I chose sounded true. Well, what they were doing was defending this wounded place.
Yeah.
And when I was able to acknowledge that to my wife, it was like, we were able to come to a decision really quickly, a joint decision really, really quickly, because I was able to put the wound in there and I needed to be part of the conversation. And then we can make a decision. But what I've noticed over the years is that the more I practice with the intention to tell the truth, the more I have a felt sense of what truth is, as opposed to figuring it out up here, because I can manipulate words really, really well, but my gut has gotten much better going, fire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like having that inner wisdom speaking up.
It's interesting that you didn't sort of catch that until you were alone with your thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because I was defending.
You needed that break. Yeah.
But I wonder if that's lying. I mean, I think perhaps, I'm not sure, the lying has to do with the underlying intention behind what we say.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if lying is intention. It needs to be intentional. Otherwise, it's just an untruth. I think there's a distinction of some kind there to make.
It's like what Rick was saying, though, you always know your intention as your mouth is going.
Well,
or do you catch it later? I mean, you can't always be in front of it. You know? Sometimes you have to say something.
I know there have been situations, I can think of a situation where I've said, I never said that. Was that a lie? I mean, I did not remember at the time that I said that. Is that lying? I don't think it is. Well, I don't know. Hard to say.
My thoughts. I just realized that I'm lying all the time here. I'd like to say something about the cultural differences. When I was learning English, they say, how are you? If somebody asks you, how are you? You should always ask, I'm fine, thank you. The worst day in your life. You should always ask, I'm fine, thank you. But in Russia, when somebody asks you, how are you? You should tell people. You tell people, how is your kids? How are your kids? How are you doing? What are you feeling? Not always, but it means that. And when all of you ask me, nobody, no matter, somewhere in grocery shop, how are you today? And once in the beginning, I tried to answer truthful, and I say, not bad. Everybody was so confused. I stopped doing this. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Absolutely,
I'm fine. So I just want to share.
I don't think that's the untrue part. I think the untrue part is when ask, how are you? Because we're not really asking, how are you?
Yes, it's for you, that's like hello. That's what yes, and it is cultural differences that we are talking about our personal feeling. At that moment, I feel that you're asking, how are you doing? How am I doing?
Pretty much.
I'm trying to get used to you.
So what is the analog? What is the same thing in the Russian?
Like hello. When somebody greets me here, how are you? I translate it like hello, just hello. It's not a question and I shouldn't answer right now everything about my life.
I think I'm going to try to stop saying how are you.
Unless
I'm really asking somebody.
Unless you know somebody's been sick, maybe, or something.
Exactly. Unless I really am asking, how are you?
Yeah.
It's kind of different, too.
I think it's really the question is, anybody died recently? Any disasters? Because we're willing to, you know, if that's really happened, then it's like, okay, you can talk about that, I guess.
I think what we're trying to do with that question is determine if you look happy or sad, is it something important or is it just a minor thing?
Okay, but if it's unknown person asks me, where did you share all my troubles with him? Well, it depends on the situation. Maybe sometimes it's normal to share something more.
I ask, how are you? A lot. And it's because I want to demonstrate some level of interest. And, you know, if somebody asks, you know, like it's mainly with people I don't know. In the grocery store, or the person giving me a coffee or whatever, they'll say, how are you? Did you find everything you want? And I'll say, I'm fine. How are you? Just, they want to be asked. I had many of them say, thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the response is that important. It's just a greeting back and forth.
I think you are more open-hearted nation, maybe. In Russian, we are more cold. I don't know how to say it. That's true. We don't talk so much in public places, really. It's not so... common, I don't know how to say.
But it depends where you go, too. Like, Portland people are generally pretty welcoming.
I've never been somewhere else, so.
Yeah, they
might even care.
Yeah, cities are not as, like, nice about that.
These guys enjoy it.
But, how are you in the South? How in you in the South is often initiation of a conversation. They actually are asking how you are, and you're likely, once you say, I'm fine, and thank you, you're going to actually learn something about the other person. I was amazed in Dallas. Big city. Put your ass, how you doing? I'm doing fine. And he starts a conversation. And when you're done, then you order the meat. And so, you know, it's different even within our own country. So the northern half of the East Coast, especially, tend to be less open. As one Texan described when she was living in the Midwest, people around here smile, but not with their eyes.
Back to the, you know, what's the intention? Which I, just because you're not consciously, like, pre-intending, that doesn't mean you don't have an intention, like... Like, I felt like that's what Rick was saying. You had an intention to defend yourself. You kind of were kind of aware of it at the time, but then you become aware. I mean, we have all these subtle... I mean, I know for myself, like, the... If I'm talking about, God forbid, politics or some kind of, you know, issue like that, and I'm having a conversation, is what I'm saying true? That's difficult enough. How do you phrase something? I don't know. Like, is it like, if you really phrased it truthfully, it would be like, I heard a report on NPR the other day that said, instead of just stating, well, you know, these companies are, you know, like, what do you actually know? You heard something, okay? So I heard something, and it concerned me, all right? That's about as true as you can get. Mm-hmm. But you watch that kind of intention, and when you start to get all riled up, what is the intention is to prove somebody wrong. The intention is to change somebody's mind. As soon as our gut starts telling us, you know, usually we have some kind of screwed up intention. When we're telling a child that everything's going to be okay, there's no bad intention there. No. It's not self-serving. It's a good intention. Mm-hmm. Somebody gives you a gift that's really just dumb, and you tell them that, thank you, it's lovely. The intention there is... Thank you for the gesture.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I don't really think it's lovely, but why would you? And yet you've probably encountered people, I was like this briefly, who are self-righteously honest. So like, I'm just going to tell it like it is. Yeah, I think that's ugly as hell. Like, what would be, then it's just a self-serving, like, I'm... That, you know, building up that kind of persona or sense of righteousness. I have the right to say anything I want.
In the spirit of truth.
Or even like, I just want to unload. That's what I did for a while, was this radical honesty stuff. Mm. Where basically if I encounter you and there's something I don't want to say to you specifically, I should say it.
You shouldn't
say it? I should say it. Get it out there. You know, which is like, and then basically I was doing that. We did a workshop actually at Dharma Rain. It was a disaster. I mean, it was like, there was an older woman friend of mine who went, and she was traumatized afterwards. She was just like, what the was that? And really it's about, you know, timely. Is it beneficial? Is it those other things that you mentioned? No. That wasn't a helpful thing to say at all. You were just saying it because you want to get it, you know, some kind of catharsis.
So that's what you did at this workshop? You just went around and you blurted out these things to these people that you might have been feeling, but...
Serious? I mean, that was the idea, was this, like, learning how to be, you know, get breakthrough, all this artifice. I mean, there's a certain kind of attraction to it, right? Like, because we, oh yeah, that's fine. And we kind of wish we could be a little more honest, but.
Yeah. So how long were you like that?
Huh?
How long were you like that?
A week. But I did, I went home and I told my parents, this is a big thing, I told my dad about something that he did when I was growing up that really bummed me out, and, you know, so I really told him how this had traumatized me, and he and he just looked at me and was like, I don't want to hear it. I mean, it's like, can they hear it? Mm-hmm. If you're just saying something and they can't take it in and hear it, then communication hasn't happened.
Right.
Somebody was talking, you know, communication, you may think you just said the truth, but it wasn't received anyway. So.
Great discussion.
Could I, before we leave, just go back to that notion of hearing silence and other people's words.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it.
I don't either.
Can anybody illuminate something around it?
I think there's more silence in my words than there used to be. I think there might be more than one interpretation of this.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's also my speech used to be a lot more just defended. If I'm saying something, I need to be right. I don't want you to say I'm wrong, or I need to fill the space, or I have some kind of agenda. So there's a kind of energy in that kind of speech, which my speech became more, there's more listening involved. There's more pauses if maybe the next thing that's going to come out of my mouth isn't necessarily true. Like, I don't know.
You're talking about the concepts are more thoughtful speech, where each word is selected, chosen, crafted, instead of just spewing, you know, phrases out there that are inexact.
Or speech that is more spacious in more than just the sense of timing, although the timing matters too, but I'm kind of thinking of the Indra's net. Like, can my description of this jewel somehow reflect the space around it, somehow reflect the humility of not knowing exact, you know, not being able to tie a knot around the truth?
Is not silence possibly related to emptiness? Which is probably another whole discussion.
But one of the ways that I think of this is the statement that came out of the chapter on stealing, the one I did. And it was, I think it was a Bodhidharma who said, or it was Aiken who said, this precept comes from the mind at rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so to hear the silence in someone's words, I think you can tell if this is coming from a person whose mind is at rest or whose mind is just very agitated. Mm-hmm. I think you can feel it almost.
It's kind of like what Rick was talking about, like, you know, the argument that you had, and you just a few minutes later were able to realize something you hadn't realized that maybe you... There would have been that ability to have some silence in each other's words.
And my wife said, I knew something was up, but I couldn't think of it. So, I mean, that's a crazy thing for her, because I'm just, no, I'm telling you the truth.
Well,
that's your problem, not mine.
We've reached time.
Yes.
Exceeded time, so.
Very good.
Thank you.
What is next week's precept? Intoxication.
Cool.
Yeah.
Favorite one.
Who's doing intoxication?
Yeah, that is
Logan.
Logan?
Oh,
Logan.
Yeah.
Or the 17th.
The 17th.
Around the 17th.
Yeah. I'm trying to get up.
Yeah.
I think we're both creaking here.
Yeah.